This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest Neil Young gives a very moving performance in a new concert film directed by Jonathan Demme, who's also with us. It was filmed in Nashville at the Ryman Auditorium, the former home of the Grand Ole Opry, with a band of old friends. The music is pretty remarkable, so is the story behind it. The new songs Young performs were written and recorded in the period when he was diagnosed with and treated for a brain aneurysm. Those songs were first recorded on his album Prairie Wind, which was released over the summer. In the film, Young also performed some of his classics, like Old Man, I Am a Child, and Heart of Gold. The film is called Neil Young, Heart of Gold. The director, Jonathan Demme, also made the 2004 version of The Manchurian Candidate, Philadelphia, Silence of the Lambs, and Something Wild. Heart of Gold opens in select theaters this Friday, but the soundtrack won't be released until the spring. So the versions of Young's new songs that we'll hear are from his album Prairie Wind. Let's start with It's a Dream.
In the morning, when I wake up and listen to the sound of the birds outside on the roof, I try to ignore what the paper says, and I try not to read all the news, and I'll hold you if you had a bad dream, and I hope it never comes true, 'cause you and I've been through so many things. The sun starts climbing the roof. It's a dream, only a dream, and it's fading now. Just a memory without any way to stay.
I asked Jonathan Demme what it was like to approach Neil Young about making a film at a time when Young was dealing with a brain aneurysm.
The turning point I thought I was contacting him at was that he had just created what was arguably, just one of the major masterworks in this master's artistic life. I just heard these songs that he was sending up from Nashville and thought, my God, you know, this is really, to capture this stuff somehow or other on film could be really amazing. I responded to the emotional dimension. I responded to my own emotions. I got very emotional as I heard this stuff, and it just gave me a lot of confidence to pursue the idea of if we were able to stage a concert in Neil's ideal location, that would be the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville, Tennessee, with his ideal group of musicians, that we would probably wind up with something that would be incredibly singular amongst music on film, in the music on film category, and something that I know I would feel very privileged to be a part of.
Neil Young, this is, to me, just an incredible part of the story. The way I understand it, you find out you have this aneurysm on your brain, and in a couple of weeks you're going to get a procedure to fix it or do away with it or whatever the medical term is. And so you decide to like book a studio in Nashville and record a new album, except you haven't written the songs yet. So you go to Nashville with the intent of writing these songs before the procedure's done. Do I have that story right?
Well, it's kind of right.
You tell it.
Really, really what happened, I was at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inducting Chrissie Hynde and the Pretenders into the Hall of Fame and visiting, and I was planning to go to Nashville the next day to record, and I had one complete song, and it was enough to go in, and I kind of had confidence that if I was going to go in there and get started, that it would start things going, and I would probably write more because I'd be in a situation where if I wrote it, I could put it down right away. And so the Hall of Fame came along, and I did my presentation to Chrissie and the Pretenders, and then I went home, and And then the next morning I woke up and I was shaving and I looked out the window and there was this you know how you get something caught in your eye sometimes and it looks like one of those micro being thing, little, you know, long, looks like DNA or something floating around on your eye, and you're going, wow, you know, look at that. It's a science project. And so I had one of those, but it looked different to me. And I said, well, this is a big one. I've never seen one like this. And then I closed my eyes, and it was still there. So then I started pushing on my eye, trying to move it around, like you usually would be able to, and it just didn't move. So I said to myself, well, this is something on your brain, not on your eye, you know. So that became a little bit, you know, then it had grown to cover half my field of vision. And everything to the left of it was just kind of looked like a mercury, silvery kind of a thing moving around like reflections on water. And everything to the right of it was clear as a bell. And there was this line, a shard of glass or something right through the middle of it that was really vibrating. So I was experiencing this, and it was becoming a little disorienting because just having so much of your vision kind of out to lunch was, the whole thing was disorienting. And so I decided at that time that I was going to get it checked out, and I had a doctor friend that I'd just seen the day before for an unrelated thing, and so I called him, and he said, come on in. And so we went. I went down there, and by then it had gone away. It only lasted about 25 minutes. So when I went down there, they took me to the doctor, Positano, took me to all of the experts in fields that were related to this. And so I saw five doctors, and they did a bunch of tests and things on me, and they're trying to figure out what it was. And they never came to a conclusion of what it was, but during the searching, they found this aneurysm, which was completely unrelated to the
eye. It was unrelated?
Yes, unrelated. It was a kind of an accident that they found it. And the visual disturbance turned out to be a visual migraine. And now I just simply take a little aspirin, and that doesn't happen anymore. And of course, you know, I guess someday I'll have to take a little more aspirin or something. I don't know. Hopefully everything will be okay there. But the aneurysm had nothing to do with it.
But, wow, you're lucky. Yeah.
So I was fortunate to have a great neurologist who I'd met. And his name is Dexter Sun, and he was there in New York, and he told me in his Chinese way that I'd had this aneurysm for 100 years, and he was showing me on the big readout that they had this big piece of film, and you could see the thing. It kind of looked like Florida hanging off of the United States. And I was looking at it, and it kind of scared me at first, and then that he said, you know, Neil, he said, you've had this for 100 years. There's nothing to worry about. You know, for you, it's nothing to worry about. For me, I have to get rid of it as soon as possible. It has to go. We have to get rid of it. It has to be gone from your head. And I said, well, how do we do that? And he said, well, I need to make some calls, and we're going to set up an appointment for you with this surgeon, Dr. Gobin, at the Presbyterian, New York Presbyterian. So they did that. And I went. Then Dr. Gobin wasn't going to be in for a couple of days, so I had three or four days between when he was coming in and then. So rather than sit around knowing that I had an aneurysm and just sit in New York with my aneurysm, I decided to go to Nashville and do what I was going to do in the first place and then fly back. So I went in there and I recorded the painter, and then I recorded the next song I wrote was I Wonder. The next day I wrote that, and the evening after the painter, and the following morning I wrote that, and then we recorded it, and then I wrote Falling Off the Face of the Earth that night and the next morning, and we recorded it, and then I went back to New York and met the Dr. Gobin, and we scheduled the procedure for 10 days from that point, and then I went back to Nashville and finished the record.
So was your life in jeopardy at this point?
Well, you know, it's one of those things where your life is in jeopardy if you have this thing. And on one hand, one doctor was telling me everything was okay, you know, I can fly, you can do whatever you want to do, and you've had this for a long time, there's no reason to change what you're doing, and just go on with your life and we'll take care of it here in a week or two and everything will be fine. And other doctors were telling me, you know, don't lean down to tie your shoes, you know, have someone else tie your shoes for you, don't put your head down. And because, you know, if you put your head down really fast and then bring it back up, there's a lot of pressure happens there or something. And so, you know, this is kind of turning into a medical show here.
You know,
but that's okay.
the great American actor Trey Wilson, who played Nathan Arizona in Raising Arizona, and I got to work with in Married to the Mob, he was perfectly healthy, and he was in a restaurant one night, and his aneurysm exploded on him, and that was it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like, you know, if it goes off, you're finished.
Huh.
So, and this was an ugly one. It was, it's a series of bubbles that form. Like if you think of your, of one of your arteries as like a bicycle tube, and
I'd rather
which
not.
Is easy for me to do that. So I have a Schwinn brain. So anyway, I was riding along on my balloon tires, and suddenly I realized there was this huge bump on my tire. And then, you know, what happens is that's a weakness in the wall of the vein, and so the pressure makes this bubble come out. And I had a series of six or seven bubbles on top of bubbles.
Gee.
So that was just getting thinner every time it happened. So it was obvious that Florida had to go. And, you know, we had to get rid of that state.
You know that classic movie plot? You go to the doctor, you find out you only have 2 weeks to live or 6 months to live, and the rest of the movie is like, what are you going to do with that time? And it's like you find out it's conceivable that you only have a couple of weeks to live, you know? And what do? You go into the studio and you write songs. I mean, if given your choice, would that have been the thing that you most want to do if you felt that your time might actually be limited?
Well, you know, there was really no way of knowing how long this thing would go on, and it gone on maybe my whole life building to where it is now. We don't know how long it took to get to where it was.
Mm-hmm.
But something told me that the thing to do was do what you do, just do what you were doing before and just keep on going. And so when I'm making music and writing songs, and you know, I had my wife with me, Peggy was there and she was helping on the record, and so everything was good. We were together and we were doing what we love to do, so we decided just that's how we're going to spend our time.
I heard that when you were down in Nashville cutting the record in the midst of all this, that you were eating barbecue every night and just really, really chowing down.
No, there's no truth to that. That's one of those internet rumors.
I want to play the song Falling Off the Face of the Earth. You mentioned this is one of the songs that you wrote right before the procedure. And it's just such a beautiful song, and it's about like an older person's love, not like new romantic, I've just fallen in love, but the kind of love that you have with somebody who you've been with for a very long time. And it's a very beautiful song. Would you say a little bit about writing the song, Neil Young?
Well, the writing Falling Off the Face of the Earth is really a case of I had a melody that I was writing that I just come up with that night. And then I was going to bed and I couldn't come up with the lyrics. But I had a melody and chord changes. And so I thought, well, you know, I'll just go to sleep and I'll wake up in the morning and start playing the changes and the words will be there. So I checked my voicemail and then I had a message from Jim Jarmusch on the who did my film Year of the Horse.
An earlier concert film.
An earlier concert film of Crazy Horse, which is like almost the polar opposite of this film in some ways because of the musical content. But anyway, Jim and I are good friends, and he sent me, left a voicemail. And it seemed, I'm not sure if he knew that I had this aneurysm or if he didn't, but he was just thinking about me, and so he left me a message, and some of the phrases that are in the message, I played it again, and I wrote down some of the phrases that he used, and then you know, in the morning, I had the song all done because some of the phrases that he used in the voicemail were in the. I just used them out of context in this song, and it kind of opened up the door for everything else. So the chorus and everything all just fell out.
Did
so,
he?
You know, once you get started.
Did he say something about feeling like he's falling off the face of the earth, or that?
No, he said, I just want to thank you for all the things you've done. You know, it's we've done some special things together.
Huh.
You know, there's it may sound simple, but you know. Things like that, little phrases that are in the song.
Well, it's a beautiful song. Let's hear it. And this is the version from Neil Young's CD, Prairie Wind. He also performs it in the new concert film, which is called Neil Young, Heart of Gold.
Just like to thank you for all of the things you've done. I've been thinking about you. I just want to send my love. I send my best to you. That's my message of love.
That's Neil Young singing his song, Falling Off the Face of the Earth. We heard the version on his CD, Prairie Wind. He also performs it in the new concert movie, Neil Young, Heart of Gold, which is directed by Jonathan Demme, who is also with us. Neil Young, I think of that as a song, you know, although you said that the idea for the song came from a Jim Jarmusch phone call. In my mind, it's a song for your wife. I don't know. There's any truth to that, but that's how I hear it when I hear it.
I agree. I think that it, you know, that's the magic of songs. That's what it's all about. Is everything is connected in one way or another, and the feelings that one person may have, maybe, when you write them down and when you sing them, it becomes a completely different thing. So, you know, that's the magic of art. That's the magic of taking a picture of something and putting it in a different context with other pictures. And suddenly it means something completely different. And that's what Jonathan and I do. So, you know, that's just the way that happened. It is a song for my wife. Obviously, I'm deeply in love with my wife. And she's the most important person to me. And I was talking to her in the song, but I was using Jim's words in some cases. And couching them in a different framework.
And she sings backup in the concert and on the CD. Jonathan Demme, since you have Neil Young singing and his wife being one of the backup singers on this, how much did you want to make of that when you were shooting? I mean, you could, like, there's a couple of, like, very meaningful glances they give each other, but you could have, like, really made a lot out of this. Do you know what I mean? You could have, like, how did you decide how much to notice that?
Well, a couple of things. One is that as far as Peggy Young goes in the film, one of the things that I really love about the movie is that for the first several songs, Peggy is part of this preposterously overqualified genius backup legion, including, you know, Emmylou Harris, Diana DeWitt, and that's just on the female side. And then at a certain point in the movie, later in the movie, when it starts opening up, Peggy comes forward and joins Neil side by side for a couple of songs there towards the end. I can't explain why, but there's just something very beautiful about the movement of Peggy in that context, and it's kind of thrilling, I think, to see this see these two side by side with their guitars singing these beautiful songs together, and certainly exchanging glances, but, you know, with each other, and they're exchanging glances with everybody else on stage too. When Neil and I first started talking very seriously about doing this film, which we just always describe as a performance film and not a concert film, because we didn't go down there to film a concert. We staged a concert in order to film it. And one of the things that Neil talked constantly about in our early conversations on the telephone was just his tremendous regard and love for the other musicians, Peggy and Emmy Lou and Ben Keith and everybody. And he spoke individually about every single person, and he would pepper our conversations with, you know, yeah, Anthony Crawford comes up on that song, and, you know, that's the song that Grant Boatwright plays the electric guitar on. And I'd be scribbling all this stuff down and just really getting very excited about the possibility of capturing all these strong bonds that exist between these brilliant musicians on film and making that part of the texture of the movie.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We're talking with Neil Young and director Jonathan Demme about their new performance film, Neil Young, Heart of Gold. Most of the songs in it were written last year after Young was diagnosed with a brain aneurysm, which has since been successfully treated. The new songs in the film were first recorded on Young's album Prairie Wind. From that CD, here's Young's song, The Painter.
The painter stood before her work. She looked around everywhere. She saw the pictures and she painted them. She picked the colors from the air, green to green, red to red, yellow to yellow in the light, black to black.
Let's get back to our interview with Neil Young and Jonathan Demme, who directed Young's new performance film. Demme also made Silence of the Lambs, Philadelphia, and the 2004 version of The Manchurian Candidate. One of the things I like about the way you shot this, Jonathan Demme, is that it's so much about the music and about the emotion behind the music. I think there really are a lot of, you know, performance films that are about how hip a band is, about how cool and fashionable they are, about what a good time the audience in the concert hall was happening. Do you know what I mean? And it's not just about the music itself. And a lot of camera work is so restless at these things, making you think that, like, unless the camera is constantly moving and unless there's an edit every second, that you're going to be bored. And a lot of that sometimes distracts your attention from the music. And I feel like all the camera work, everything's done in service to the music and the emotion.
Well, to put even more of a point on it, one of the bottom line missions here was to make sure that every single lyric, every word of every song, which in our film kind of functions a little bit like stories. Neil's is a storyteller with his songs. We wanted every single word to be just so easily accessed that nothing would intrude on just a complete intimate relationship between the audience and the message that Neil was singing about. And the other thing was, I wanted to make sure that we were up very, very close a lot of the time on Neil as he was singing these songs, so that his emotional state as he presented the stuff was something that we could be very, very akin to. And I definitely felt that you're right. stylish camera moves and dolly shots and crane shots and kinetic editing, all of which I love and have been used exceptionally well time and again with music and drama and what have you, but certainly in the music world, I felt, you know, that none of that stuff would serve us nearly as well as beautifully composed, beautifully lit. We had Ellen Kuras doing the lighting. She invented new colors in her artistic interpretation of what the songs meant to her. Nothing could serve us better than those kind of shots. And I really aspired to find ways and hope that our shots played a long time and were not interrupted by an edit to another shot, unless we had something really worth going to. Operating on the premise that, you know, we're providing the best seat in the house, so we don't need to be cutting around all the time. So what it all added up to, in a way, was I felt, you know, this is kind of bold. It's almost, in this day and age where the camera's always moving, who knows, maybe the fact that we're kind of settled in a little bit more and don't cut as much might feel kind of avant-garde at this stage of the game.
Neil Young, when you went back to the recording studio after the procedure to remove the aneurysm, were you in the same mood that you were before? You know, you'd had this terrible revelation about the aneurysm. You had the procedure. You got through it. It seemed to be successful. Were you in the same frame of mind that you were when you had started writing and recording those songs?
Well, now when I shake my head, you know, they put some coils inside my brain. And now when I shake my head, no, just kidding.
But you're not kidding
this
about
them. This is radio, isn't it? Hey, come on. It's radio, Bob and Ray.
But you're not kidding about coils inside your brain, right?
No, they're a little platinum.
He was actually shaking his head just then. That was the darndest thing.
But what did they put inside your brain? What did they put inside?
Little platinum slinkies.
And what's
tiny
the purpose?
Tiny little slinkies. Well, they're flexible, and they're like, you know, they're springs kind of, and they're made out of the thinnest, smallest, most, you know, delicate platinum, and they stuffed this thing full of them. They went in with this, you know, radiology thing or whatever. You know, they watched it on TV, and they sent this thing up through, you know, from my leg up through and into my head, and packed this little aneurysm full of these slinkies.
And that does what?
Fooled me. Fooled my body completely. My body thought I had a bunch of scar tissue going in there. So scar tissue gets more scar tissue. So I think my body filled up the whole aneurysm with scar tissue, and now it's full of scar tissue and there's nothing there. The blood just goes flying by like nothing's wrong.
Huh. That's really amazing. So, be still.
He just scratched his head.
Well, I want to play another, like, really beautiful song from Prairie Wind. You know, one of the songs that you do in the performance film Heart of Gold. And this is a song that was written for your daughter. It's called I'm Here for You. Would you talk about writing this one?
Well, this is probably the second last song that I did before going back to New York. It's a song about, you know, it's about my daughter, and she's, you know, she's 21 and she's moving on. You know, she's in college, she's graduating, and I'm really proud of her, how well she's doing, and she's an artist. And you know, I of course I miss her all the time, but I really don't want to, you know, intrude. And so I was just trying to communicate to her that she had a place to go, but it wasn't a place she had to go. You know, if she needed me, that I was there, and that myself and her mother would be there for her if she ever needed us, and that she was, you know, free to go and free to stay, and that we were behind her all the way, you know. So it's just that kind of a song, and a kind of a letting go without letting go kind of.
Well, it's a great song. Here it is. It's I'm Here for You.
When your summer days come tumbling down and you find yourself alone, then you can come.
That's I'm Here For You, a song from Neil Young's latest CD, Prairie Wind, and he also sings the songs from this CD on his new performance film, which is called Neil Young, Heart of Gold, and the film is directed by Jonathan Demme, who is also with us. You know, the two songs that we just played, this one and the one called Falling Off the Face of the Earth, I hear them, and I might be being, like, overly dramatic here, but they sound to me like the songs that you might have written as messages to leave behind for the people you love just in case something happened to you. Am I reading too much into it?
Well, these songs are meant to be for anything. They're meant to be for if I'm here or if I'm not here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But all my songs are like that. So I really try to write songs like that. I wrote a song years and years ago called Going Back. I feel like going back. And it could have been one of these songs. And you know, it's all about not one particular time or place or situation, but the whole thing. I try to make it so that it'll work. You know, that's where I'm coming from. So it'll work no matter what happens.
This movie ends with One of These Days, which is Neil wrote, you know, years ago and reinterpreted for the movie. But that's as rich and, you know, emotionally powerful a summing up song as any other song on the Prairie Wind album, I think.
Are there things that you think are easier to say in a song than in conversation?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, practically everything. Actually, yeah. But, I'm glad that I can write songs because I would have probably gone crazy by now if I couldn't have put some of these ideas down in a way that's obscure enough so that you can say them at any time. And yet, when you hear it, if you're thinking about it and you're wide open to it, then you can go a lot farther than the current conversation.
How did you both decide which songs to include in the performance film? Obviously, you know, the songs from Prairie Wind, but there are also early Neil Young songs on there. And you obviously had a lot of songs to choose from. So how did you decide which ones you wanted to include?
Well, Prairie Wind was all I cared about when we started making the movie. It was it. Just that suite of songs was, as far as I'm concerned, a perfect, just amazing body of work unto itself. And we were pretty far down the line. You know, we knew we were going to go to the Ryman. We knew that Manuel was going to do the costumes. We knew that Michael Zansky was going to do the backdrops. We knew that Andy Keir was going to cut it and Ellen was going to shoot it. And then I was in my kitchen one day and I suddenly went, wait a minute, we're going to have a 55-minute movie. So I called Neil up and said, and it's really pretty crude, I just said, you know, if we only have 55 minutes and we're hoping that we can get this film into movie theaters, would it be possible to add an encore dimension to kind of rough out the running time, to flesh out the running time? And Neil right away said, I felt funny asking him that, but I did. And then he said right away, sure, let me think about it. Obviously, I'll have to draw from my Nashville body of work pretty much, and he also said he wanted to think about it and select songs that would be thematically compatible with the songs of Prairie Wind. So, you know, off he went, and then we saw each other a little while later, and Neil had created a list of songs, and he showed them to me, and it was basically the songs that are in the movie and a couple of others, and it was such a treasure trove. But the funny thing for me is that I was so focused on Prairie Wind and my love for those songs I thought that's terrific that our film will end with some wonderful of the earlier songs, but I had no idea that those earlier songs were going to wind up packing such a tremendously strong emotional wallop.
Well, the effect that you have with some of the old songs, you know, the effect I think that it registers on me anyways in the audience is that here you have some of the songs, Neil Young, that you wrote and recorded when you were a young man, and some of these are about age, and now you're singing them as, you know, someone who isn't a young man. I think, you're around 60 now? And so
yeah.
The songs...
What's so old about that?
So the songs, they have a different resonance, they have a different meaning. And you know, in the audience, like, you feel you, almost reflecting on the songs and how the sound of the songs have changed?
There's a trick. There's a trick in there to interrupt. Sorry to interrupt you. But what really happens with these songs is that the whole beginning of the film, we're singing songs that have never been heard by the audience that we're singing them for, and they're all brand new. So they're first-time presentations of the songs, which makes you listen. And you open up and start listening to something because you don't know what it is. And you're seeing it in a way that you've never seen anything from me before. So you're seeing it in a new way, and you're listening to new songs that are being done for the first time. So it really opens you up. So what happens when we get to the second half is that the audience is totally open to new material and listening to the words and trying to pick up on everything that these songs are saying, because you only have one shot to pick up on it. And we, when we go into the second part of it, it's basically a chronological trip through my music, with a few departures from chronology, but starting with back in Buffalo Springfield and going through to Harvest Moon or Harvest Moon. So it goes through that, but the thing is, you listen to it a lot more instead of celebrating, hey, there's another old song and he's doing these songs that I like. You're not doing that. You're still listening because you've been tuned into listening in the beginning and listening to the words. So they become part of the story because you've trained yourself to listen, and instead of just watching and celebrating these old tunes that you've heard before, you're listening to them like they're new tunes. And so I think that opens the door for people to go on a journey with the songs.
The songs in the movie are, the takes are all so good that you almost feel like, God, it must have been post-dubbed or something, because no concert goes this smoothly, you know, that with, like, note-to-note perfection. Jonathan Demme, how many takes were there for each of the songs? How did you manage to get such good takes?
Well, we didn't do takes per se. The concert was performed two nights in a row, August 19th and August 20th, and the curtain parted. And the music was there. In fact, the music started before the curtain parted. And we didn't redo any of the songs. We filmed them on both nights. And then later we were able to either select which night seemed to be the better of two excellent performances, because frankly, each night was unbelievably great. And every once in a while we did some combination of the two nights. In one instance, in Old King, which is a song I love, I got so carried away that, with Neil's permission, we actually made that longer and stretched out the instrumental part of that, so we could really just let the audience just something about everybody up there doing that kind of what I call a hoedown, and Emmylou Harris strumming amazing guitar and Neil rocking out on the banjo and what have you. And that was it. We didn't do any retakes. You have to realize that the amount of preparation for Neil and his fellow band members that preceded the show, they rehearsed for 10 solid days straight ahead. Like Neil said earlier, everybody knew that they were introducing the Prairie Wind songs for the very first time. No one out there ever would have heard these. The CD hasn't come out yet. It was going to be a brand new experience, and they had the unique thrill of presenting it for the first time on the stage at the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville to an audience that had been largely invited and was made up of songwriters and musicians and people who just adore the kind of music that they were about to hear. So everybody was just at their peak form, and we just got the cameras in focus and they let it rip, and it was quite an exquisite night of music.
Neil Young, one of the things that adds to the emotional depth of the movie is that on stage, before introducing one of the songs, that has to do with your father, you talk about how he had recently died after having dementia for 10 years. And you talk about how interesting it was to watch him living in the moment. And I thought, that's the kind of positive thing to find about somebody who has dementia, is that they're living in the moment. Did you hold on to that as a way of seeing something positive about his dementia and his inability to remember the past?
Well, I just focused on what his life was about now, and not what it was about, you know, what it used to be about. Just more because the love is still there and everything. And I couldn't think of any other way to describe it,
mm-hmm.
because that's really all that was that I think was left. I don't know. Perhaps it was easier for him to remember things than it was for him to speak about what he remembered. So I don't know the connection. I don't know whether people with dementia actually can't remember anything or whether they can't put the words together to explain what it is, because just putting a sentence together takes an incredible amount of reasoning power in the present. And it really, we take it for granted and we speak along, and that's creation, the human body, that enables us to think and talk and do all these things at the same time. So as it slowly breaks down and with the connections get lost, it's kind of hard to say exactly where things are and what's happening. But I know that my dad was living in the moment, so I use that phrase to describe what was going on, and that's the best I could do.
Do you feel right now that you're... There's something very cathartic about the performance film. Do you feel like you're like you've come through the other end of something by having kind of lived through the whole aneurysm thing, written the songs you wanted to write, recorded the CD, done the performance film? They're both really emotional kind of experiences. Do you feel like you're out the other end of something?
I feel like I'm at the beginning of something else now.
Of what? Do you know?
No. But I know I'm at the beginning of something, and nothing ever really ends with music. It just keeps on going on. It's like an eternal exhaust out of some, you know, interplanetary spaceship. It just keeps going. You know, it's just out there. All that you put out just keeps on happening. People could listen to this music in 100, 200, 300 years from now, as far as I know. So what we do now lasts forever, and what we're going to do next is what matters.
Jonathan Demme, one last question for you. When you were making this movie, did you dream these songs every night? Were you hearing them so much and thinking about them so much that they just, like, stuck with you, even when you should have not been thinking about them, like when you should have been sleeping?
I'll tell you, all my three children worked on the movie with me, each in different capacities, and my wife Joanne was there. And all I can tell you is that everybody was obsessed with these songs, and we'd no sooner come home from, you know, 12, 14-hour rehearsal sessions, and we come home and somebody or other would put the CD on. So we lived Prairie Wind throughout the shooting, and we'd drive around in the cars on the weekends playing it, and finally we all were able to sing all the lyrics to all the songs, so it got very obsessive, yes.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for talking with us. Thank you.
It was fun, Terry. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Neil getting up.
Neil Young's new performance film, Heart of Gold, was directed by Jonathan Demme. It opens Friday in select cities and in more cities next week.